Welcome to the Hunting Outcast Mortal Kombat Retro Series. We'll be joined by, from Inks of Kendra, Kendra Hale, as well as Edward Hale, and from Punisher Body Count and Dane and Jake Get Classy, Dane Lamont. But we want this retro series to be a flawless victory, so I know right now that this podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and severe language. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're reviewing Mortal Kombat. I'm Christopher Lambert. Nah, I don't think so. I'm Hunnic Outcast. Kendra, thank you once again for joining me on this one. This seems to be one of our favorite movies of all time, or so they say.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey there, everyone. It's me, Dane, from Punisher Body Count.
And, of course, we have our husband, Edward. How are you, good sir?
I'm quite well. How about yourself?
Don't even get me started. But I will get us started. Mortal Kombat. Now, as I said last time, or the time before that, this came out, well, the, what would I say? I guess the reboot Mortal Kombat X came out a couple weeks ago. And yep. I figured with March Madness, with a tournament, I wanted to discuss it last month. Didn't get a chance to. Now I am. So there. There are rumors that they are trying to remake the movie. Lots of luck with that. The good news is we have Legacy and Legacy 2. The bad news is we still kind of have Annihilation stuck in our heads, which we will be discussing next week. Conquest we are going to be discussing in a couple of years, because that's a long one. I mean, that's probably, between Conquest and Legacy, those kind of saved Mortal Kombat's ass, not to mention the fact the remake in 2011 and this upcoming sequel. Unfortunately, Jason Voorhees will not make an appearance for another week or so, which sucks.
Yes, Predator.
Predator is actually coming in May.
Good.
Yes, he is coming. That's when he's showing up. I got the expansion classic combat, whatever you want to call it, season pass, but he will be showing up in May. It's a very long, idiotic conversation. Even then, I don't know if he's even going to be in story mode. I think what they're doing is they're going to put him, like, in single-player mode, but story mode isn't anything that great. I mean, you have Goro, and that's, I guess, good enough for everybody. So it's really confusing what they're doing with the four remaining characters. But I heard they're going to be adding more. Shiva, Sektor, pretty much.
Cabal and Sindel are going to be in it as well, and quite a few others.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the biggest Mortal Kombat expansion that we've been wanting for the longest time. But I guess the question is, we'll go around the room here. Where were you when you first played the game?
Mortal Kombat was one of those game series that I always liked, but I don't think I ever owned a game of it. I'm trying to think about it, and it wasn't due to lack of consoles. I had a Super Nintendo and all that jazz, and I just never owned the game. But what Mortal Kombat meant to me was, A, it was a good hangout for just for the friends in my neighborhood, because someone had it on their Sega Genesis, or someone had it on the Super Nintendo, or on those awful N64 games that came out. Someone had it, and we'd all go hang out at that guy's house. And it was kind of a game you played with other guys to prove you were a guy. Which, oddly enough, like, remember, that half that game's hype was just built on, look how gory and violent this game is. It was kind of a way you proved how cool you were by how good you were at the moves and whether you could play the fatalities right. Me, I was always the asshole that played Scorpion and did the get over here thing. I mean, it was fun, but I was never good at fighting games. In fact, sometimes Mortal Kombat was just a good anchor for a get-together. Like, two or three guys would play it, and you would watch those power gamers do the cool moves, and you'd sit in the background, eat some chips, and hang out with friends, and, you know, hop in every now and then. It was just a good hangout game for me, especially when it came out. I was about 11 or 12, and that's a good game to play for preteen and early teens, because, trust me, the edge was always there. it was edgy before edgy became an internet meme.
Bowling alley. Edward?
I was in a 7-Eleven.
Oh, God. I was in a pizzeria, and I just remembered waiting to order a couple slices, and next thing I know, kids are standing around this game, and it actually has a story. And the story is more, you know, captivating. And then you see these live-action characters fighting, and they're bleeding, and heads are being ripped off, and people being burned alive. This, of course, started its controversies, where we had the senator in Connecticut who wanted to ban the game. And when this came out then on the Super Nintendo, of course, the blood was literally swapped with sweat, and all the fatalities were castrated. So, unless you owned a Genesis, you couldn't do the famous, you know, Sub-Zero fatality, or Kano ripping the guy's heart out. Thankfully, when 2 and 3 came out for Super Nintendo, we were made. And then, by the time the fourth one came out, I could care less. I don't know anything between, what is it, Armageddon that came out on PlayStation, or whatever that one. Anything up until the remakes, I'm not too familiar with Shaolin Monks, or whatever those other games are.
Oh, Deception, Armageddon.
Deadly Alliance was the resurgence of the series, for lack of a better term. It actually picked up after 3 and a little bit of 4, and basically tried to move the series forward and bring it into a generation, and succeeded, actually.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it, but for me right now, I'm okay with the 2011 version and X, and that's pretty much it. The movie, however, I love the poster for this, because it's kind of like the Batman symbol. Like, if you see the Batman symbol from Batman 89, you know you're going to see a Batman movie. With Mortal Kombat, when you see that dragon insignia, you know you're going to see a Mortal Kombat movie. So,
yeah, look at Annihilation under it.
Well, God, and also the fact, destroy all expectations underneath that tagline, so that was fun. But this was probably one of the biggest things. The second sequel came out, and we were getting more characters. The movie, I have to say, saw twice in theaters. It opened, well, the budget was $18 million, 3 weeks straight in 1995, closed with $122 million. And it kind of tried to take elements from the first two games. Because we had some of the characters from 1, some of the characters from 2. We, I guess, kind of had some of the fatalities. Not all. We had a very interesting cast.
Friendship and fatality on Scorpion.
Yeah, we had Scorpion's friendship, yeah. We didn't have Babality, which I was kind of disappointed with. I don't think we have seen Babality in the TV show or the movies yet. But we did get friendship. Yeah.
Johnny Cage dropped that, you know, to my biggest fan, Odo.
Yeah, we had that. But I guess we'll go into this. Did you see this movie opening day?
Actually, I saw it day before opening, because my comic store that I was going to had midnight passes for its midnight showing.
Oh, nice.
I saw it later. Yes.
Yeah, I saw this late night on, well, opening night. I saw this kind of like at a midnight showing. Like Friday night into Saturday morning, Rocky Horror Picture Show type of audience. Like, these were the hardcore Mortal Kombat fans. So it wasn't the little kids or anything. These are the ones that were like, it felt like Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, we were standing up and cheering, and when we saw our characters and everything. But the plot, I watch it now, and it's kind of aged well, but I feel that there are just some flaws here and there. What are your thoughts?
But it was flawless.
Well, yeah, flawless. Well, I guess we should start with the opening between Shang Tsung and Liu Kang's brother Chang. The blue screen, or the green screen, the way they're standing behind. Sets weren't all there. Wasn't too impressed, but what did you think of the fighting between the two in the opening? Like, was it? Did you think it was too much of the slow motion? when these two were fighting.
It was decently choreographed. I mean, for the time.
Yeah.
For the time, it was decently choreographed. I mean, it's definitely not going to be what it is today, but that's because they've, you know, we've got films like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where you've got beautiful, you know, beautiful screened and set and choreographed fighting between two fighters. Back then, it was just, let's go to the nearest, you know, the nearest place to get our backstory and watch what these guys do and go from there.
We'll get Cobra Kai.
I do love the actor, though, who played Shang Tsung. I did get to meet him in passing one time. One, I was taking a karate class for about a year and a half. My sensei knew him through a tournament, and I actually got to meet him, so it was kind of cool. He actually got the part of Shang Tsung by just dressing up as the character and standing on a chair while reading the lines.
Nice.
And obviously he did an awesome job because he's, you know, picked up the character again in Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably one of the better villains I've seen. I actually enjoy... The one I'm kind of disappointed with is Christopher Lambert. Or Lambert, you know.
Hey.
Well, hear me out. Hold on. Hear me out. You know, the problem that I have with him in this movie is that he's just 50% Yoda and 50% Obi-Wan Kenobi. Highlander, I mean, we know who this is. My problem is that he's not, he doesn't fight in it. I mean, it's Raiden, the God of Lightning and Thunder. He's playable in the video game. He doesn't do much in this movie but talk. I mean, that's one of the better basic complaints I have about the character.
Well, I mean, even though Raiden was always there as the guru, though, he wasn't really, I was okay with him not fighting until, you know, for lack of a better term, the shit hit the fan. Because he always was supposed to be that, you know, he was, oh goodness, I don't even know a good analogy, but he was like the airbender from Avatar. He was the peaceful, you know, elder god. He wasn't the one that was there to fight.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's just that I was hoping a little bit more from him. But then, of course, we have Liu Kang. And I love this actor in a way. He kind of reminds me of, like, an Asian Luke Skywalker with the feathered hair and the facial expressions and the anger. He just wants to get in and fight. And he's trying to learn, like, the way... You know how I am with Star Wars.
I think the Luke Skywalker analogy is really accurate for Liu Kang. But I also think that's what makes the guy so important to a franchise like Mortal Kombat. He's kind of like Will Turner in Pirates of the Caribbean. Everyone loves Johnny Depp, everyone loves Jack Sparrow, everyone loves the crazy pirate villains, but Will Turner's the guy that creates that straight man, the action man, the serious guy, so you can compare the other craziness around him to him. He creates a good form of narrative relativity to really make the other characters shine. Now, some people say, well, a boring character's still a boring character. That's fine. But for Liu Kang, I thought it was great for a couple reasons. Like, one, people forget that he was supposed to be the good guy. Everyone calls him the Ken and Ryu, but there's plenty of good guys in Street Fighter. If you look back on the fatalities of the original Mortal Kombat game, Liu Kang was the only guy whose fatality did not result in an obvious death. Because he used to be a true Shaolin monk and used to believe in the ideals of Shaolin. But you have to remember where this guy is. Everyone is a psychopath. Everyone's killing each other for power plays that make Game of Thrones look like Shakespeare. And this is a guy that, at least in the beginning, refused to kill. And even as the games progressed, where, yeah, even he had to get on the gore train, he's still the moral center of it. I always kind of felt bad because as the games continued on and people felt like the franchise was in decline, one of the solutions was to kill Liu Kang. And really, that didn't do anything, and they brought him back. I always just like the guy because not only is he the needed light of hope to make the other people shine, the other craziness shine in Mortal Kombat, he's also a very accessible character. People can look to him and do some easy bicycle kicks and still feel like a badass. He's a great character, and I wish more people would give him credit.
The problem I have, though, I feel this is actually Johnny Cage's story in a way. Johnny, I feel, because he's upset that he's being considered a fake. So right. I feel that this is actually, and actually this video game is supposed to be based on Jean-Claude Van Damme. Because originally, this video game, Mortal Kombat, was supposed to star him as the main character. But when he dropped out and he decided to star in Street Fighter, and believe me, we're going to be talking about that in the not-too-distant future, because I got that on Blu-ray. But Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to be the main character, and when that fell through, they brought in and created this Johnny Cage character that's supposed to be a satire on Jean-Claude. I thought the way that, you know, they're calling him a fake, and he's on a movie set, and he's telling people to fall down, and he doesn't feel he's being respected. This feels like it's supposed to be his story. And then we have Sonya Blade, Bridget, which I'm sure another movie I'm going to be talking about in a couple years, Last Action Hero. I don't know if you ever seen Last Action Hero?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Okay, then you probably remember the character where she's the daughter and it looks like she's being attacked and she ends up actually fighting the henchman. Okay, well...
Yep.
Yeah, okay, well, here she is as Sonya Blade. Originally this was supposed to be Cameron Diaz was going to play Sonya. But while Cameron... Yes, that Cameron Diaz from The Mask and, you know, Any Given Sunday and... and Sex Tape and The Departed... No, not The Departed. Gangs of New York. Unfortunately, Cameron broke her wrist during rehearsal, so they had to bring in Bridget. And I don't know. I don't know much about the character. I didn't play much of her in the video game. I know she's got kind of like this fatality where she blows a kiss and sets you on fire. But I...
Yeah.
I don't know too much of... Are her... again, with the mythology with the video game, are Kano and Sonya bitter enemies, or is this just something for the movie?
No, that's true.
Yeah, that was in the game.
Oh, that was in the game. Okay. Well, Kano... What was the thing with his face, though? Like, it was scarred during... what was the mythology with that, do you know?
That was actually never really explained. Just as they said it in the... You know, the original games was he has a cybernetic eye.
Yeah.
That was all we got. So.
Okay, well, whatever the case may be, is that Sonya, of course, is trying to chase Kano when they're in Hong Kong at this point, and we get Jax. Now, Jax doesn't show up until the sequel. Of course, he's shown here. The actor, they don't say much about his biography. He does give one of the best line reads, I have to say, like in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, where Gene Wilder goes, "No, stop, come back." I mean, I don't know if Sonya is 100 feet away and this guy is like 200 feet away, or if they're not on the same location or the same set, but it was probably one of the worst line reads this actor ever gave us, Jax, and I could not find anything else on this guy.
That's why he was recast in Annihilation.
Well, actually, it's kind of interesting because Michael J. O. White was supposed to be Jax. And he ended up starring in Spawn instead of Annihilation. So he really bet on that wrong horse. But he is Jax in Legacy. So, Spawn. It's got John Leguizamo and Michael J. O. White, and that's all I got. But anyway, the scene where on the boat, of course, we get Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Two fan favorites, and people, of course, went apeshit when these two came out. Again, I know the mythology with these two, and I know that they're both bitter enemies. Thoughts on this with them being under the influence of Shang Tsung, or were you pissed off at this, that they were under his influence, and not part of the tournament where they're fighting each other?
I didn't care. Now, these days, I'm just like, no, you're wrong! And then,
right.
Then Legacy came along, and they're like, everything, so watch this.
Yes, Legacy, it did in fact save Mortal Kombat's ass, so I'll give it that.
Even Ed Boon, here in the series, he said the same thing. He was just like, no, they did it right with Legacy.
Yeah, I'm going to pop in Legacy after this. It's kind of like after I watch Gotham, I watch Batman 66, or I watch the Nolan movies. So that's how I roll. Gotham. Two more episodes and I'm done for like 8 months. Yeah, so anyway, we fast forward, I guess, to the tournament. Or, I have a stupid question. What are the exact rules of this tournament for the movie? Because we never see brackets. I don't know who's really part of Earthrealm and who's part of Outworld. It just seems like everybody is fighting every... No, I'm not wrong on this one. It's like Liu Kang is fighting this guy with dreadlocks. Is this guy from dreadlocks from Earthrealm or Outworld? It doesn't really explain anything. He just...
It's actually a guy on YouTube does the CinemaSins thing, and literally he called out the same thing. He was like, okay, we've got our three heroes. We've got Shang Tsung, Scorpion, and Sub-Zero, and Kano, and everybody else that we don't know where they belong. Who the hell are all these other guys?
Yeah, it
wasn't well thought.
No, it wasn't. I mean, a tournament, as I said, should have brackets about who's moving up. I have no idea. We also kind of get this Raiders of the Lost Ark moment where we have an Elimination Squad member, which of course I guess are the Stormtroopers for Outworld, fighting Sub-Zero. And it is Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, it is. It's like, you know, like the story with Raiders of the Lost Ark. That guy had the sword, Harrison Ford had the flu, so he shoots the guy dead. Here, it feels like Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's about ready to charge at Sub-Zero, and Sub-Zero just freezes him, and that's it. And then, of course, we get Goro for the first time. And for 1995, I was impressed with the special effect. I was really impressed what they did for their $18 million budget on Goro. I wanted to say with the research, in the movie and in the video game, he's half dragon, half man. He's been the champion for half a millennium. He's supposed to be based on the Sinbad movies, the Ray Harryhausen. Pretty much, like I said, he's got four arms and he's a badass. And he is... Yes, he's voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson, who I pretty much know as Principal Lewis on American Dad, and Cleveland Brown Jr. from The Cleveland Show. I love the voice for this character. We get enough of him, but I think it sucks that, once again, we don't see too many fights. I guess it's because it's supposed to be a low-budget film. But impressions on, you know, the whole Goro-Kano scene, like when they're just sitting there and pretty much Goro is literally dressing down Kano. I don't know. I mean, I'm 50-50 on this, but Kano's supposed to be a badass and then they kind of like make him into this coward. So I'm kind of torn what they kind of did with Kano in this movie.
No, I mean, I get that. I can see that point of view, but I also like the fact that you have this... For Earthrealm, at least, you have this guy who is supposed to be nigh unbeatable. He is the evil person for Earthrealm, and then he gets to meet Goro, who is, like you said, he's been the champion for forever, and backs down from him. I mean, who wouldn't be scared of seeing that? I mean, I'm going to walk down an alley and be like, oh, okay, yeah, we're walking out, not going near it. So I don't blame him for being like, okay, I'm going to let you talk, and I'm just going to sit here and eat my chicken wings.
Or actually, a chicken that was covered in iodine. But, you know, I get the idea. Then, of course, we get Princess Katana. That, of course, is a real-life actress and model from my neck of the woods, Brooklyn. There's not much really to say about her. 10,000 years old. She's in the sequel, Mortal Kombat 2, where she has those fan blades where she can decapitate you. I think her other fatality is she kisses you and you explode, or I think that's Melina. I keep forgetting which is the difference between...
I think that was Katana. Katana was the one where your head would explode.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't think she was necessary for this movie. She could have been mentioned because I felt that we already had Sonya. We kind of get the history that she's 10,000 years old, and she may be, you know, heir to the throne for Outworld and may be able to overthrow and abolish tournaments. At least that's what I got out of, you know, the dialogue when Shang Tsung shows up and starts talking to Goro and Kano. But then that's interrupted when, you know, Sonya, Liu Kang, and Johnny Cage are trying to track down Goro, or... No, I'm sorry, they're actually trying to track down Shang Tsung, but they see Goro's shadow. I remember that. Yeah, that was a funny moment where, like, they see the shadows, like, go and find out what that is. That was pretty funny. But we get into the moment where they take on the Elimination Squad. Good choreography. It's a good fight. You know, it feels like the live-action stage show, which I saw. But then we get a little bit more from Raiden, I guess. You know, more banter about, you know, if you anger controls or you lose and stuff like that. But we get, of course, the most controversial scene that I read in the novelization for this movie. I don't know if you know the alternate scene for the Kano-Sonya fight. Okay, when Sonya and Kano fight in the novelization, it's pretty much the same way. But you're probably wondering why Liu Kang is standing there. What happens is that when she's about to break Kano's neck, Liu Kang tells Sonya that her anger will be the best of her, so she doesn't kill Kano. Shang Tsung is upset, but it's pretty much, you know, he wins and Kano lives and he just goes off doing God knows what. That's pretty much it. Of course, we get the Scorpion Johnny Cage fight, which we talked about, which is probably the best fight I saw in the movie, next to the Shang Tsung Liu Kang. I mean, that's a well choreographed fight, yeah. And of course, we get the friendship code, where, you know, he drops the autograph, and then we get another alternate scene, because we kind of fast forward here with the tournament where we bring in Goro. Well, actually, no. I guess we should talk about the whole Sub-Zero Liu Kang fight. I am not a fan of this fight. I hate this fight. For two reasons. The first reason why I hate this fight is because we have Kitana and Liu Kang kind of fight, and she's giving him advice and saying, like, the element of life will help you. Okay, fine. Then we get Liu Kang versus Sub-Zero. And is it me, or is it Raiden who drops the bucket? Because he kind of... Somebody comes in and puts down, like, this bucket of water. Is it Raiden? Because that's what it looked like.
I don't know, honestly. I just thought it was awfully convenient.
Yeah. And then all it pretty much is, Sub-Zero is ready to stand there, and he's trying to collect this gigantic ball of ice. And Liu Kang looks at the bucket and goes, water? And he pretty much takes the pail, throws it, and freezes Sub-Zero to death. I hate this battle. They don't do this in the video game. I don't know why they would do this in the movie. Then, of course, I guess we should get to the whole Goro match, like the Goro montage or the Gorage. He fights that guy, Art. It is a good fight, though. I have to admit, for a guy...
Mortal Kombat.
But since this is Goro's, you know, he's the champion and everything, I love how... The character's name, I think, is Art, because he kind of meets Johnny Cage. I love how this guy's fighting the effect. It's choreographed well. Now, I don't know if it's somebody in a suit. I don't know if it's a CGI effect and the guy's just punching at air and they'll put the CGI effect in later. I'm not too sure how they choreographed this one. But for what they did, I was really impressed with this fight with Goro.
It was actually a prop dummy that they had for him to fight.
It's a lot better than what I saw in the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark musical. But, you know, something I'll never discuss again. So, then apparently, the three Earth Defenders are trying to find out how they're going to defeat Goro. Johnny Cage, of course, decides to advance himself to the tournament somehow, because I don't know who else he's beaten besides Scorpion to go up to Goro. But I guess you could do whatever you want in this, you know, tournament. So I guess you don't know the Goro-Johnny Cage alternate scene, then.
Enlighten us, otherwise one.
Okay. In the movie, Johnny Cage does a split and punches Goro in the junk. Okay. In the novelization, what happens is Johnny Cage challenges Goro and they go to a garden-esque type of area. And what happens is there are a bunch of statues. Now, there's a lot of statues in this area, but in this movie, but they go to a place with statues. Johnny Cage starts to act all Bugs Bunny. And what he does is, he hides behind the statue, and Goro keeps punching. Johnny hides behind about, they say about 20-somewhat statues, and Goro keeps punching, and he gets exhausted. Johnny then does what he does in the movie. He runs away, and he goes to this cliff, but he hides. When Goro comes out of nowhere, everything else pretty much still happens. But when Goro is holding on to the cliff, Johnny then is about to kill Goro, but then Shang Tsung comes out of nowhere and says, finish him. Johnny feels bad and he's about ready to pick up Goro, and Goro says, no, I'm a Shokan warrior, I have to die with honor and dignity. That's what happens in novelization. What happens here is him just punching Goro in the balls, I guess, for the juvenile audience. But to me, didn't happen in the video game. No reason for it to happen here. It sucked.
Didn't it happen in the video game?
Johnny Cage had the nut punch in the initial game.
Really?
That was like his signature. Yeah. Beyond the shadow kick and his little glob toss, that was like his signature move.
You know what? I only played a Scorpion throughout the game in the first one, so that's the only one I ever picked. I just picked Scorpion, and I beat the game through Scorpion, and that was it. So I don't know much with Kate, other than the fact of what I found out now. So, but then apparently Sonya gets captured, and she's in Outworld, and Raiden can't enter Outworld, so they have to find a new guide, which turns out to be Princess Katana. But before that happens, we get the Reptile fight. And Reptile was in the second video game as well. Reptile, if I understand this correctly, is not their enemy. If I'm not too mistaken, I think he's actually an ally, but he's trying to fight for his freedom. But it's been a while since I've found, you know, researched Reptile's mythology. But whatever the case may be, in this movie, he's just pretty much a special effect, and then turns ninja, and then fights Liu Kang for filler, and then Liu Kang just steps on him once he turns back into a CGI effect. Are you fans of Reptile at all? Because I've never really played as him.
I'm a fan of his fatality.
The fatality is that what he uses his tongue to rip your head off, right?
That's one of them. The other one is that he dissolves your body in a pit of acid.
He kind of uses the acid in this movie for a tenth of a second. Yes, he kind of uses the acid, but pretty much after that, that's it. Sonya is then reduced to wearing like a Princess Leia slave outfit dress type of thing. Xiao Sung is trying to force her to be part of the tournament. She refuses, but then Liu Kang comes in, and we all know what happens there. It's kind of like the fatality spike death thing from Mortal Kombat 2. Because I pretty much know that if you, like, you punch somebody now, you uppercut somebody, they fall down the bed of spikes. Katana comes out of nowhere and says you have to face yourself, your enemy, and your fears. I love this fight between Shang Tsung and Liu Kang. It's kind of like, well, a video game. It goes through the stages. They first fight on this floor of a tower. I don't get it at first, but Liu Kang gets a few punches in. He causes Shang Tsung to bleed. He just looks at him. He calls him a fool. Now, I don't know exactly. I'm not too sure what the point was other than just it pisses him off. But then, of course, you know, they start to fight up these stairs. And it's a great set, I have to say. For all the sets, this one's my favorite. And then, of course, we see the classic spikes come out from the sign. And, of course, we have the enemy. You know, face your enemy. Here, Shang Tsung, as we know, has been harvesting souls. He starts to bring out from warriors. One of them, if I'm not too mistaken, kind of looks like the guy that Goro killed, Art. And I'm not too sure if that's supposed to be him or that's just a coincidence.
It would make sense if it was, though.
Yeah. Then, of course, Shang Tsung, because I think he's now, he's playable in the second video game, right, Shang Tsung?
Yeah.
Okay. He does shapeshift in the sequels, correct? Like, he could become the character that you are?
Yeah, he could become either the one that you are or randomized, I think, in the third game.
Okay, well, we know he shapeshifts and he turns into Liu Kang's brother. And, of course, this is the other challenge. Is like, you know, I forgive you for letting me die. And then, you know, of course, Liu Kang calls bullshit on this one. Thank God, finally. We, of course, get the Mortal Kombat techno music and does an uppercut. Well, actually, no. He does one of my favorites. I think in the video game, Liu Kang is known for shooting fireballs, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it was his dragon fireball.
Right. So this is pretty much the same. He uses the dragon fireball and shoves Shang Tsung into the bed of spikes. Shang Tsung.
We want to clarify something real quick.
Sure.
In the third game, it was not randomized. Apparently, you had to enter certain button combinations, and then that would let you be whoever your combination was.
Okay. Like I said, I don't remember too much because I would just end up playing the Scorpion. And if I wasn't playing the Scorpion, I think I was kind of trying to work out as Reptile. So those are the two that I like. Wow. So anyway, Shang Tsung is defeated. The souls are freed, kind of like Freddy Krueger. Now, which it is, it kind of feels like Freddy Krueger. And then apparently they can all go home. Now, in the novelization, again, the ending is different. Liu Kang, Princess Katana, Johnny Cage and Sonya go back to the Temple of Light. They meet with Raiden. The dialogue is the same, but instead of the Emperor appearing, Raiden just, you know, bids his farewells and he goes away. But I guess they felt that this movie was going to do well. They added on this new ending where Shao Kahn appears. And it's Dr. Claw. Because it's voiced by Frank Welker, who voiced Dr. Claw.
I'll get you next time, Gadget.
Yes. So this is literally Dr. Claw, which I love. 0 being the lowest, 5 being the highest. I guess, Kendra, will go with you first. What would you rate Mortal Kombat?
Just on Inner Kid alone, 5.
Ed?
Then a 5, now like a 3.
I have some reservations with this movie. I love the choreography for its time. I love a few of the special effects for the time. A couple of the sets, choreographed, actors. But the one thing is, with what you could do with Christopher Lambert and just have him sit around and not fight, you know, is kind of a bummer for me. The fact that Johnny Cage, it should have been his story, and there's supposed to be a romance between him and Sonya. Now, Mortal Kombat X, as I said, they have a daughter, Cassie Cage. And just like the father, she has her own selfie fatality. I guess they're trying to do a romance, but it doesn't work out that well, and we're going to get into why, you know, Lyndon didn't come back for the sequel next time, and I don't blame him, and why Lambert didn't come back, and why they ended up using the director of photography to direct Annihilation. But for right now, personally, it's a guilty pleasure movie, but professionally, I have to go down the middle in 2.5 on this one for now. Only because it ages okay, but it depends on my mood. That's pretty much how I feel about this movie. Although Legacy, I cannot wait to get my hands on and watch. I'm really kind of curious how they've, you know, Ed Boon has taken over and hopefully fixed whatever he could from the last movie. And then, of course, I have to go and see Conquest. So, guys, again, thank you so much. And Kendra, of course, promote yourself and then some. Where could the good people find you?
Oh, goodness. You guys can find me on Facebook. I have both a personal and a professional art page. It is www.facebook.com/bgirl0204. And then, I mean, honestly, anybody can come and say hi to me. I'm a pretty nice person.
Yes. And Edward, you got some stuff to promote?
Yeah, I've got a personal page on Facebook and a professional art page as well. The Art of Edward Hale. Find me on there, message me, say hi, I won't bite, no problem. I've got a DeviantArt page too, so you can find me on there, find all my work. That's about it, honestly.
You can find me and my partner Jacob Williams at PunisherBodyCount.com and our Facebook fan page by the same name, Punisher Body Count. It was a pleasure being on the show.
Well, thank you again, guys, and you know where to find Hunter Galcast at Twitter at Hunter Galcast and iTunes Hunter Galcast and Facebook Hunter Galcast. And join us next week as we talk about probably the biggest, well, you know what, it was 1997. What franchise didn't fail in 1997? Batman and Robin, Spawn, Jurassic Park, The Lost World, you name it, it pretty much, 1997 was the destroyer of franchises, yeah. But next week, we get to destroy all expectations with Mortal Kombat Annihilation, and that's going to be fun. So, and I got stories. You can't begin to I can't begin to tell you of how deep I dug down the rabbit hole to find out about how this one bombed. But until next time, listeners, your souls are mine.
Hey, Geekcast listeners, do you ever listen to Punisher Body Count and think to yourself, this show would be awesome if it had less toilet humor and was not about the Punisher? If so, join me, Emily Williams, as I class up the Punisher guys on Dane and Jake Get Classy, or like the Oprah Book Club of comics. You'll hear us discuss famous works like The Dark Knight Returns and The Grove, along with graphic novels no one else is talking about, like Blue Monday and Blankets. You can find us at daneandjakegetclassy.wordpress.com. or on iTunes.
Pixels in the Animation is the Geekcast Radio Network's video game cartoon review show. We are covering every episode of 9 different video game cartoons. Join TV's Mr. Neil and myself, TFG and Mike, as we trek through multiple Mario tunes, Zelda, Captain N, Mega Man, Sonic, and we are also driving through Donkey Kong Country. Pixels in the Animation is 100 episodes of video game cartoon goodness, so tune in to help us find the Pixels in the Animation, which you can find every Wednesday on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com.
Finish him!